How do you actually use all of the technologies that are available today to move value on the internet to deliver money where people want it? Now you can have the best product, and it turns out it's built on an open network, and it unlocks instantly the ability to move money, not only just, you know, within Spark and cross-chain and on Lightning and on Bitcoin L1, but also across all of the traditional, you know, payment networks and Visa. That's how all roads actually go to Bitcoin, is actually by leveraging the ability to offer an account that's both dollars and Bitcoin. Then gradually, you'll use more and more Bitcoin. It's a cost center that's in the billions of dollars, and now you can flip that and make it a profit center, net margin of billions of dollars, and also not be captive to a bunch of other networks that are leeching on your data. And so the incentive is massive for these platforms to do this. We think this will win.
Thank you. I just saw, well, I was actually doing an interview when you made your announcement, but I caught it on the live stream afterwards. It's pretty big. This is, I think this is a real game changer for Bitcoin in some ways. But I want to start from the start with you. Why did you decide to sort of focus your entire career on payments?
I think that, first of all, great to be back. Thank you. I think that the reason I've been so maniacally obsessed with money movement and payments is because it's just not right. Mm-hmm. And it feels utterly broken. And it feels that many people have tried to fix the way that money moves around the world. And everyone has failed, including myself previously. And so I developed this kind of obsession with figuring out a way to make money move on the internet like any other type of content. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's been my focus.
So when you say you failed before, I imagine you're talking about Libra and and PayPal. Well, PayPal clearly is not a failure in terms of the company. But what do you mean by you failed?
Look, if you were to actually stop someone, we're in Vegas, like if you're stopping someone on the strip right now, and they're from another country, and you wanted to send them money, it wouldn't be an easy thing. Mm-hmm. You would see a Brazilian person, and they would be like, okay, I can give you my Pix key, and you wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Or you could find a European, and they would give you an IBAN, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't know what to do with it if you're here in America.
I deal with this personally in the business side, because I live in Australia, and mm-hmm. The sponsors, I think all the sponsors have a base in the US. And so I obviously will invoice them with an option to pay in Bitcoin, but they don't always take that option. Yep. And you can make it work with international routing and mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff, but I get crushed on sort of fees and exchange rates. Like, it's not
easy. And it takes days.
Yeah.
And many people who are working in the space are like, oh, but you can just pay everyone and anyone with a stablecoin. It works fine, right? Mm-hmm. And the reality is, most people you would meet today, some of them would say, yeah, fine, just send me a stablecoin to my wallet. But most people won't, right? Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't even know what a stablecoin is. And so the question is, how do you actually use all of the technologies that are available today to move value on the internet, to deliver money where people want it? And that's what we did today. I think, you know, with this announcement of Grid Global Accounts, we've basically put together and stitched together all of the work that we've been focused on obsessively over the last 4 years to move money around the world on a platform that enables you to input and output any kind of money, whether it's a, you know, fiat currency on a banking system, Bitcoin, of course, or a stablecoin, and just make it work for people and businesses.
So for anyone that didn't catch the announcement, what is Grid Global Accounts?
So let's take a step back, okay. Right? So today, when you think about all of the different types of content we have on the internet, mm-hmm. you have images, you have text messages, you have emails, you have all of these things. And there's an app for every single one of those. Like, if I need to send you a photo, there's like 15 different ways I can send you a photo.
Yeah.
And I don't even need to ask you if I have your phone number. I can just send it. It'll work. There's just no such thing for money. And today, if you're a platform, if you look at where the money originates and where people and businesses earn money, They earn money in a variety of different ways, but increasingly so, they get paid by platforms. Mm-hmm. And you can be a host on Airbnb, you can be a driver on Uber, you can be a creator on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube, and you get paid by those platforms. And this becomes kind of your financial nexus, right? Yep. Like, and the way that those platforms today move money around is you accumulate a bunch of money, you have to wait until you get to a certain threshold for most people, mm-hmm. and then you get paid much later, not at the time you earned that money. And when you get paid, the platform loses, and you kind of lose too, because the platform basically pays you to your bank account. And so the interest on that yield doesn't accrue to you or to the platform, it goes back to the bank. The bank typically provides a pretty average service, and everyone loses. And so we wanted to go to the core of that problem and figure it out. And so what we built, and this couldn't have happened even a year ago, because like you have to have a perfect alignment of stars to actually do this, which we now have, is basically a global dollar account product that lives on Spark. And Spark is our Bitcoin L2
yep.
that supports stablecoins natively and moves stablecoins virtually for free. Mm-hmm. And so it's an account that you can have that's branded to your platform. And your users, your stakeholders can use that, get paid in dollars, and we'll soon add many other currencies to make it a multi-currency account. And then the minute you got money from one of these platforms or you fund it yourself, you can spend it in more ways than any account before its time. So the first thing is we announced this morning a partnership with Visa to become a Visa principal member, which is not a small deal. And that will allow us to issue Grid Global Accounts-based cards in 100 countries. So you receive money in this account. It's a new kind of embedded wallet, so you can log in with Google, with like, you know, Apple, with the passkey. Mm-hmm. You don't need to worry about like losing your seed phrase or your private key. That's a thing of the past. And so it's a self-custodial Spark-based Grid Global account. You have dollars. Now you can get a debit card and spend it at 175 million Visa merchants globally.
And when you spend that, can you spend in dollars, in Bitcoin?
Yes. Anything that has a balance in your account, whether it's Bitcoin or dollars or any other currency, can pull from, you can pull from any of these to actually use your debit card. But that's not it. Like, that's not enough. The other thing we did is we also made those accounts compatible with Lightspark Grid, which is the product that we've been building for years, connecting into domestic payment systems in 65 countries. So to take the example I gave you earlier, if you're a Brazilian here, you can give your Pix key to someone who has one of these accounts, and that person can pay you in real time in your Brazilian bank account in Brazilian reais. And that's true in 65 countries. Hmm. So now you have a balance. You can move that balance to your local bank account in your local country, in your local currency. You can pay anyone in the world instantly in real time. And then, because we didn't think it was enough, we also added cross-chain support. So if you want to pay someone using USDT on Tron or USDC on Solana, you can do that too, because we wanted to make sure that a dollar in a Grid Global account can be a dollar anywhere. And so if you combine all of these capabilities, it's really truly the most powerful global dollar account. And it so happens to live on top of Bitcoin via Spark. And so it makes it an address that's both Bitcoin enabled, with real Bitcoin, not wrapped Bitcoin, and dollars. And you can buy and sell Bitcoin, of course. And then the last part of it is that we feel that agents are going to change the way that interfaces are built, and that you're not going to interact with apps and websites as much. Mm-hmm. And so we made it agent ready, which means that I can actually delegate my account to an agent that can now do all of those things on my behalf. And I have one running on my phone. I can show you later if you want.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'll be able to just say, hey, you know, text, get your contact details, your bank details, and it'll settle in real time, right? And it'll contact you via WhatsApp and get your details and pay you.
If you already self-custody Bitcoin, you know the deal with hardware wallets. Complex setups, clumsy interfaces, and a seed phrase that can be lost, stolen, or forgotten. Well, BitKey fixes that. BitKey is a multi-sig hardware wallet built by the team behind Square and Cash App.
It packs a cryptographic recovery system and built-in inheritance feature into an intuitive, easy-to-use wallet with no seed phrase to sweat over. It's simple, secure self-custody without the stress. And Time named BitKey one of the best inventions of 2024. Get 20% off at bitkey.world when you use the code WBD. That's bitkey.world and use the code WBD. The thing that keeps me up at night is the idea of a critical error with my Bitcoin cold storage. And this is where AnchorWatch comes in. With AnchorWatch, your Bitcoin is insured with your own A-plus rated Lloyd's of London insurance policy. And all Bitcoin is held in their time-locked multi-sig vaults. So you have the peace of mind knowing your Bitcoin is insured while not giving up custody. So whether you're worried about inheritance planning, wrench attacks, natural disasters, or just your own silly mistakes, you're protected by AnchorWatch. Rates for fully insured custody start as low as 0.55% and are available for individual and commercial customers located in the US. Speak to AnchorWatch for a quote, and for more details about your security options and coverage, visit anchorwatch.com today. That's anchorwatch.com. Do you want to pay less in taxes and stack more Bitcoin? Of course you do. Well, by mining Bitcoin with Blockware, you can. Under Section 168K of the US tax code, Bitcoin mining servers qualify for 100% bonus depreciation. This means every dollar you spend on miners can directly offset your income in a single year. And that's true for both business owners and W-2 earners. If you have $100,000 in ordinary income, you can purchase $100,000 in miners and potentially offset your tax liability entirely. Blockware's mining as a service does all the heavy lifting. They secure the rigs, they source the low-cost power, and they handle all the day-to-day maintenance. So you get to stack Bitcoin every single day while drastically shrinking your tax bill. Get started today at blockwaresolutions.com/WBD and use code WBD for $100 off your first miner. That's blockwaresolutions.com/WBD. Bitcoiners, as you know, with fiat money constantly debasing, wealth preservation isn't optional. That's why I recommend Swan Bitcoin, a team of dedicated Bitcoiners who work with families and businesses to build and secure generational wealth with Bitcoin. Strong relationships with clients are at the center of everything Swan does. A dedicated Swan Private Wealth representative, which is a real person that you can text and call, will help you build a Bitcoin wealth strategy using Swan's comprehensive platform of Bitcoin services, including tax advantage retirement accounts, advanced Bitcoin cold storage using collaborative self-custody, inheritance planning with both trust and entity accounts, tax loss harvesting, asset-backed loans, and more. Swan have helped over 100,000 clients since 2020, and if you're serious about acquiring and securing Bitcoin, I recommend Swan. Meet the team at swan.com/WBD, which is swan.com/WBD.
I mean, there's so much there that I want to ask you about, but let's start with, you said this wasn't possible a year ago.
Yep.
Stars had to align. What had to happen to allow you to do this?
So it's really four things. The first thing is the regulation. Mm-hmm. So if you want any of these big platforms, those global platforms, to be able to launch these things, they have to do it, you know, from a place of certainty from a regulatory standpoint. And, and we didn't have that. And now we do. Like, we have the Genius Act in the US, we have MiCA in Europe, we have similar legislation almost everywhere. So now you can actually launch your own stablecoin or use stablecoins and not worry about that. So it basically made stablecoin real money.
I've got a question on that, actually, because like you say, these were really stablecoin, like tokenization sort of bills that passed rather than anything to do with Bitcoin.
Yep.
Do you think Bitcoin's out of the woods in terms of regulatory clarity as well?
Yeah, I do think so. And we can talk about that after, but like, I had like this whole like schizophrenic relationship with stablecoins until it clicked that actually stablecoins was the best thing ever for Bitcoin adoption. And we can go down that rabbit hole in a bit. But anyways, so now stablecoins can be used. So that's part one. And I think Bitcoin regulation is clear as well. Part two is embedded wallets, like really good embedded wallets. And we've seen that, like, you know, companies, whether it's like, you know, Turnkey or Privy, they've done a really, really amazing job at making those accounts, those wallets, actually usable by anyone without fearing losing your funds, which I think is like a massive step, which is absolutely a prerequisite.
Yeah.
The third step was we needed a network on top of, in this case, on top of Bitcoin that could support stablecoins natively. which Spark does really, really well and now has massive reach. Like, you know, it's in the Tether wallet, it's in WDK, it's in like all of the Bitcoin wallets you use now. And that's like really, really also a prerequisite. And then the fourth aspect is really the rise of stablecoin-backed debit cards, which the networks and the banks have now been leaning on a lot more, which again, wasn't possible before. So if you combine all of these capabilities, plus the work that we've done over the last 4 years, connecting to 65 countries, domestic real-time payment systems, and you bring it all together in a product, that's Great Global Accounts.
So this is not an actual app that people are going to download from the App Store, right? This is like the infrastructure, the plumbing behind the scenes. Is that right?
So it's basically... It's not an app because, I mean, I have an app, like, but that's, you know, it's a wallet that's called Bread that's built on top of this thing. That's like, you know, the first wallet that will hit the App Store, I think, this week. And that team did a really good job at like building a best-in-class dual pocket dollar Bitcoin wallet. And then they were kind enough to share the source code with us so we can add agent delegation and all of these things and play with that in a real product rather than a prototype. And so you will experience this in an app or on a website, but we're not consumer facing. So we're like, we could have done it, by the way. And I said this on stage earlier because like I'm tempted, like, you know, it's such a good product. So I'm really tempted to launch it myself, right? And it's like, hey, the world needs like an account like this. You would use it.
Yeah, I absolutely would use it.
Like everyone would use it. And so it's really tempting. But like, you know, I feel really passionate about like this idea of building the best network for money. And, and if you want to do that, then you need to empower the platforms that have the reach to actually go and build on their own. And so that's the route we've chosen.
So obviously you've experienced at PayPal and then at Facebook with Libra. And we talked about why you think you maybe failed there. This is obviously a better solution, but PayPal has a huge network effect.
Yep.
Like how do you beat them?
Well, I mean, PayPal's network is closed.
Yes. But everyone knows of PayPal. Everyone has like has probably interacted with it at some point. Like yeah, they've got a big user base. Like how do you catch them?
I think, you know, you just have to build a better product, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I have to give a lot of kudos to the Block people, you know,
they've
building Cash App and building Square, because they have their own proprietary product, but they're making it ultra open.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the Bread app that I was telling you about, or Tether wallet, can now, like, if you have one of these, you'll be able to go to a Square coffee shop and tap to pay. Mm-hmm. It's wild when you think about it, right? It's a totally open network because it lives on top of Bitcoin. And we think this will win because ultimately when you build on open standards like the internet, like, you know, AOL or CompuServe didn't win because it was closed. And so the problem and why it didn't happen yet is because those products that were open were far worse than the closed products.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be anymore. And, you know, Great Global Accounts is a great example of that. It's much better than any dollar account you can ever have, like, you know, you could ever have until now. And so now you can have the best product, and it turns out it's built on an open network that enables all builders to actually add value to the overall value that the network provides to every endpoint on it. So it's just great time.
The really cool thing about this is I've been waiting for a Bitcoin-friendly bank to try and offer me a product like this where I could have, you know, my Australian dollar account, maybe a US dollar account, and a Bitcoin account in there. But this has gone... You've completely circumvented the banks and just built it, which is awesome. Tell me how it works a little bit, because if I choose to pay in Bitcoin and I take my Visa card in and I tap to pay, what's happening behind the scenes there? Are you doing a swap for like Bitcoin stablecoin and then paying the merchant?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, the merchant piece like is like completely outside of our view, right?
Yeah.
It's like Visa is now building merchant settlement for debit card and credit card payments and stablecoins, but that like that's on their side with the acquirer. What we do on our side is deliver the dollars, so to speak, at the issuer, like as an issuer. And then like whatever the arrangement is between the merchant and the acquirer, that's like their business. So if they are receiving money in their local currency, that's what's going to happen. And so the merchant always gets paid in whatever currency they want. And the way that it works is basically that you have this wallet that you authorize a card to pull from with limits that you can set. And then whenever you make a payment, it can pull from either your Bitcoin balance or your dollar balance or your other currencies soon.
And when you say this product's sort of entirely built on Bitcoin, can you just walk through what you mean by that?
It's all built on Spark. So basically, a Grid Global account is a Spark wallet. And it comes with a bunch of bells and whistles on top of just being a Spark wallet, which is like the debit card rails, the integration with the Grid capabilities to move money around locally and globally on traditional payment networks. That's the difference, right? And so what it needs from having just a Spark wallet is like the ability for people to, like if they want to interact with a debit card or with traditional payment rails, they can KYB or KYC, depending if they're a business or a person. And from that point on, it unlocks instantly the ability to move money, not only just, you know, within Spark and cross-chain and on Lightning and on Bitcoin L1, but also across all of the traditional, you know, payment networks and Visa.
Okay, I want to dig into something you mentioned just briefly a little earlier. You were talking about this kind of like gig economy that's cropped up where people are getting paid from YouTube's, TikToks. Yep. And one of the issues you said in there was that like the platform aren't collecting interest, that you're not, like this money's kind of like in limbo. Is interest something that you'll be able to do at some point?
So the way that this works is, and the way we recommend it to platforms, is they can issue their own stablecoins. And I'll expand on why this is actually possible, because that's also a thing, right? We used to be in a world where if you don't have enough liquidity or network effects, actually doing your own stablecoin was a bad idea because you couldn't use it anywhere.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, you know, useless.
Yeah.
And because we've made the account fungible and compatible with all of the other stablecoins and all of the other wallets and all of the other chains, it doesn't matter now. Because if you're receiving like your own coin, your own stablecoin in, you know, I don't know, Nigeria, and you want to pay someone who has a Tron wallet and is using USDT, you can do that. So the liquidity problem we've basically erased by making those balances fungible and enabling bridges and other atomic swap platforms to actually exist on top of Spark. So what we advise platforms is launch your own stablecoin. We'll help you do that. And you'll earn interest because it's yours. And then in the US, there's a lot of debate whether you can actually pay interest to holders or not. But outside of the US, that's not a problem in many countries. So you can do that if you want.
Because in the Genius Act, they said no interest on stablecoins, right?
I mean, that's more the Clarity.
Oh, the Clarity Act, sorry.
Yeah, too many. but yeah, so in the US, it'll be more difficult to do that. But internationally, you can definitely do that.
Yeah.
And typically, like, I mean, of course, this is a much more powerful account than a normal bank account for payments in the US. So we expect a lot of US people and businesses to use it just for the purpose of sending and receiving money. But typically, if a platform is paying someone in the US, and it's a US-based platform, that's where they have the least friction. Where they have the most friction is actually sending money internationally. And for those, like they can actually distribute yield if that's what they want to do. And if they want to keep it, they can keep it. That's their choice and let the market play out, right? But like at least they keep it versus I'm pushing it to, I don't know, a Spanish bank. And then it's black hole for me, the platform, and for my user. And you know, more than black hole from a revenue standpoint, one of the things that no one talks about is the fact that like, if you're connecting and if you're basically a tenant of someone else's network and you're pushing to all of the banks at the edges, you also share all of the data, all of your data. And the data was maybe kind of a cost of doing business, sharing all of the data that will enable those businesses to actually build businesses off the back of the work that you've done to spin up that platform and generate, you know, product market fit and economic impact. But in the age of AI, it's like negligence to let everyone leech on your data and build products. And, you know, if you do that, then you control your own data and you control your own economics. And it's a, you know, it changes the game completely.
So you're not collecting data on any of this?
No, because it's a self-custodial wallet.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like in the stack of Bitcoin wallets that I use, I have like my spending wallet, my Lightning wallet, which, you know, I might have like up to $1,000 something in it. And then I
Which one do you use? What's your favorite?
I tend to use Phoenix the most.
Okay.
I like Phoenix. And then on top of that, like then I really go to like proper cold storage Bitcoin. And yep. again, even levels in that. Uh-huh. And I think really the way people have looked at Bitcoin wallets so far is that your Lightning wallet should only have a little bit of money in. You don't want to maybe put tens of thousands of dollars in a Lightning wallet that's on your phone.
Yep.
Like where does this fit? Like how big do you think accounts should or could be on this?
It doesn't matter. So like this is the beauty with Spark. And we spent so much time doing that, right? It's like if you opened a Tether wallet, which they've done a really good job, it's like so clean and so easy to use. And you have USDT on a variety of different chains, and you have Bitcoin on L1, on Lightning, and on Spark. And all of the Bitcoin piece is on Spark, basically. It's running on Spark. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. It's like, it doesn't matter where you hold it as a user. It's just taken care of for you. So you'd never have to actually open channels and park liquidity and do all of these things. It'll just work. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately that was something that was needed for mass market adoption because, like, you know, mass market is not going to think about where should I keep stuff and how
they're
should
never
going to
be balancing channels. And
so you have a FAD balance in an account that's actually safe, and you cannot lose the, you know, the seed phrase or any of that. And you just use it for everyday purchases and payments.
I want to dig into that a bit more. When you say that it's actually safe, like how is it secured?
So today there are two different models, but if you look at like the way Turnkey does it, so they basically split the secrets in, I think, three parts and trusted execution environments, basically. So, you know, secure enclaves. And the beauty is basically that you can use a traditional, more traditional login, which means that it's mass market. So you can use Google to log in, or you can use a passkey, which I would recommend.
Yeah.
And so then you have a passkey that's securely stored either on your device in a secure element, and then the secrets that are in three different parts that can only be reassembled when you log in with a passkey, which is super secure and easy. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that you don't put your passkey in a hardware key that you lose, then you're fine. And most people will actually just use like a password manager and like use a passkey that they store in their password manager or log in with Google or with Apple or with their phone number. The nice thing with this is that the platforms themselves can offer their own login that you're already using for the platform and extend the capabilities of your account. Like let's say that YouTube were to do that. I'm riffing. Mm-hmm. You could have a YouTube Money account, and basically your Google account that you use to publish your videos on YouTube becomes like your login to your YouTube Money account or Google Money account. And you would receive that money and you would have a debit card and you can move that money in real time to your bank account in Australia 24/7, even on a Sunday at 2 a.m. if that's what you need. Mm-hmm. Or move it to a stablecoin on any chain and you would totally use that, right?
Yeah. I think it's really exciting. And one of the things that I love about this, alongside the stuff that Cash App and Square have been doing and Strike have been pushing this, is that it feels like we're moving into an era where Bitcoin is actually going to be used as money properly.
Yes.
Because for so long, like the narrative has been store of value, but Bitcoin was always destined to be money as well.
Yes. Yes.
Like,
yes.
Do you think this is the starting point?
Yes. And actually, now let me close the full loop of the stablecoin stuff. I think the interesting thing with the stablecoin piece, it's actually a pretty profound realization that I had. And I was with Miles Sutter earlier from Cash App, and I gave him credit for that. Because when they announced that Cash App was actually going to do USDC on Solana, I'm like, what in the world? What? Like, you're the most Bitcoin-forward company. Yeah. What are you doing? And I was in the middle of my own like schizophrenic journey with stablecoins. And then I'm like, no, wait a minute. He's right. They're right. They need to consider that stablecoins on other chains are like fiat payment networks. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do I integrate with like SEPA in Europe? And I'm fine with that. And I don't integrate with Solana for stablecoins. Makes no sense.
Yeah.
It was like an ideological mental trap. And so I'm like, no, they're actually totally right. And then we went full tilt. So with Grid, we went like really full tilt. Like we support all the chains and all the stable coins. And then we went even deeper with Grid Global Accounts because we made it compatible with all of the networks. And so now what that does is it gives you an account and a platform that you want to use because you can actually make your money move to wherever you want it to move. And the account that is the most connected ends up being a Bitcoin account, right? Because it's a Spark wallet. Mm-hmm. And so that's how all roads actually go to Bitcoin, is actually by leveraging the ability to offer an account that's both dollars and Bitcoin. And if you don't have the dollar, then, you know, Bitcoin is not as valuable. But like if you have dollar and Bitcoin, then gradually you'll use more and more Bitcoin. If it lives on the same address, then...
So that's the reason that you think that stablecoin proliferation will increase Bitcoin adoption, just because, correct, just from almost proximity, like they're in the same account, correct, and at some point people might start playing around with Bitcoin, seeing what it could do, learning about it.
Exactly.
Interesting. Because do you see any problem with like the stablecoin takeover of the, like any person living in a high inflation country is going to, mm-hmm, choose the stablecoin over their local fiat currency. Like it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, or Bitcoin, like, you know, it's kind of interesting. Let me get there in a sec, but like, you know, just back to the Square thing, like, mm-hmm, you know, so now you have an account and you have a stablecoin that could be on any chain.
Yeah.
But now we can swap it and pay at a Square merchant, and the rails are Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So the open network that moves like the TCP/IP packets for money behind the scenes here is Bitcoin. And so that's amazing. Like it's like at both the level of like now I'm exposed to it because it's in my wallet and I can buy it, I can sell it, and I can use it. But also when I'm paying on a network for my coffee at a store, the rails are Bitcoin. And that's like a, you know, it's a pretty profound thing that's happening right now. And you know, not many people are actually really paying attention to that shift. But the fact that we're building on an open network that has that kind of reach right now is, I think, a profound turning point for Bitcoin.
If you hold Bitcoin, your phone number is one of your biggest vulnerabilities. SIM swap attacks are one of the most common attack vectors targeting Bitcoiners. Somebody socially engineers an employee at your carrier, moves your number to a new device, and they're into your account. It happens because traditional carriers put a human in control of your phone number, someone who can be bribed or tricked. But Cape is a US mobile carrier built from the ground up with privacy and security at the core. They don't ask for your name or social security number when you sign up. They collect the minimum data required, delete it as fast as possible, and never sell it. When you sign up, you receive a 24-word passphrase, just like a Bitcoin wallet. That's the only way to move your number. Not a customer service rep, not even Cape's own staff can do it. You're the only person who controls your number. If you hold your own keys, you should hold your own phone number too. So head over to cape.co/WBD and use code WBD at checkout for 33% off your first 6 months. That's cape.co/WBD and use code WBD. Do you wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Well, Ledger makes that possible. They're the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, and since 2018, they've issued over $9 billion in loans with a perfect record of protecting client assets. With Ledin, you get full custody loans with no credit checks or monthly repayments, just easy access to dollars without selling a single sat. Ledin exclusively offer Bitcoin-backed loans with all collateral held by Ledin directly or their funding partners. Your Bitcoin's never lent out to generate interest. I recently took out a loan with Ledin. The whole process was super easy. The application took me less than 15 minutes, and in a few hours, I had the dollars in my account. It was super smooth. So if you need cash, but you don't want to sell Bitcoin, head over to ledin.io/WBD, and you'll get 0.25% off your first loan. That's ledin.io/WBD. If, like me, you're heading to Vegas for the Bitcoin conference this month, then Club Orange is the app you need. There's a million things going on at the conference, and it's the best way to find all the after parties and side events and connect with Bitcoiners while you're there. I've been using Club Orange since it was Orange Pill app, and it's my go-to whenever I'm traveling. Not just for conferences, but for finding meetups and events and merchants accepting Bitcoin wherever I am. There are over 19,000 Bitcoiners on there, and it's a great way to stay connected, whether you're on the road or at home. If you're on there, drop me a DM and say hi. And if not, search for Club Orange on your app store or go to cluborange.org.
I saw a couple of months ago, you wrote like an open letter to the CEO of PayPal. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an open letter. It was like my rant. I woke up in that morning and I was like pissed seeing all of those news. And so I was just like, it was an open rant. It wasn't an open letter.
Okay. But yeah. So you were there for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Does part of you wish that PayPal had have done something like this?
Yeah, but like the problem. So here's the problem, right? It's like the innovator's dilemma. It's like you're a company and you're doing, I think, $11 billion of, you know, net cash flow a year with your business. And you need to accept the fact that you're going to cannibalize yourself to actually build in the open. Mm-hmm. And you need to go and tell all of the investors that hold your stock, because you're a public company, that they need to understand why in the world you're doing that.
Yep.
And so it's untenable for many people, unless you have a founder CEO who has total power over the company. It's never going to happen. And so I just think it was just the wrong place to do this. And it just needs to start from the bottom, right? And then propagate. Because otherwise there's just too much tension between like your existing revenue and like, you know, I mean, look, they did the PYUSD thing, like the PayPal USD. PayUSD, I don't know how you say it. And like the obvious thing to do if you want this thing to actually really succeed is like swap every balance that you have in dollars across the entire network, whether it's on Venmo, on PayPal, on merchant balances, to PYUSD, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason they didn't do that is because like the unit economics were not the same. And so they would have to cannibalize themselves. And so it's like you make all of these small, like, you know, bad decisions for the reason, for different reasons, for to optimize your bottom line, which you have to do because you're responsible to, you know, delivering results to your shareholders. And so it's just the wrong place.
Yeah. See, I think this product's awesome. I think it's really cool. And it's something I would 100% use. The difficulty of running a business in Australia with all my sponsors and clients in the US is real. But in throughout history...
We'll set you up after this.
I would love
for
to.
Real. Yeah, like, we can set you up.
Yeah. Awesome. But in history, there's like lots of examples of a better product losing to a more centralized product that might already have sort of market share. Mm-hmm. What is it that makes you think this is going to win?
Because I think that there's a deep economic incentive for the platforms to offer this to their stakeholders. And since it's also a better product for the stakeholders, then you get the flywheel to go. And the economic incentive is not small. Like if you're a big platform and you're paying out to 10 million like creators or, you know, drivers or hosts or whatever it is, it's a cost center that's in the billions of dollars. And now you can flip that and make it a profit center, net margin of billions of dollars if you actually adopt this, and also not be captive to a bunch of other networks that are leeching on your data. And so the incentive is massive for these platforms to do this.
So are you going to be pounding the pavement, trying to talk to the YouTubes of the world? And
yes, definitely. For sure. Yeah.
But you've not had any of those conversations yet?
No, we've had some. Yeah. We've started. But like, you know, recently, because we just launched a product today. So it's in the last few weeks. Yeah,
that's awesome. When you look at stablecoins on Bitcoin, obviously you can use stablecoins on Spark now, but traditionally over the last, you know, 5 years or whatever, it's largely been on things like Tron and Solana.
Totally, 100%.
How important is it to bring that back to Bitcoin?
I think the key is really to have a single account that works with both dollars and other fiat currency, digital versions of fiat currencies. In the same place. I think the single account thing is really, really a fundamental product thing. Because if you have multiple addresses, you start thinking about these things differently. It's like, you know, oh, no, so you want to send me stablecoins now, like send it to my, you know, Phantom wallet.
Yeah.
And if you want to send me Bitcoin, send it to me and this thing. Or you can have a multi-address wallet and it's like, oh, wait a second, I need to find... like, and so like the ultimate last step of this... And it's kind of interesting because we started with that and probably the order was wrong. But like we started with this UMA protocol, this universal money address standard that's used by a bunch of banks. And I think this is where it all ends, right? It's like the single address becomes like a human readable address. Mm-hmm. And then you as a receiver can decide whether you want to receive dollars or you want to receive Bitcoin. And I think there's a very elegant way to do that, but you have a single address that you can give anyone. So back to the example of, you know, the street here, you go on a street, you find someone, it's like, can you send me money? And they can give you a thing that looks like an email address that everyone uses, and you can send them money and they'll receive it. You'll send it in whatever you want. They'll receive it in whatever they want. It'll work 24/7 in real time and it'll be great.
And it makes total sense. This also sounds like it may solve an issue I've had with like merchant adoption of Bitcoin, which is there's a chicken and egg problem with it. And I saw this like in 2017, where I live, there was a company called Travel by Bit that were trying to make all the merchants accept Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And through that year, I saw all the bars, restaurants have these, we accept Bitcoin here stickers. And it was actually the first time I ever bought something with Bitcoin.
Generally, it's one or two guys that are really passionate and like, you know, pounding the pavements to convince people store by store, right?
Exactly. Uh-huh. And like in 2017, that was probably quite easy because Bitcoin price was ripping. And then throughout like 2018, 2019, you saw those stickers get ripped off windows and now none of them take Bitcoin. But in this dynamic where you can pay in Bitcoin and they receive whatever they want, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
But how do you think that solves that entire problem?
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, I know we're talking about block a lot, but I think they deserve a lot of credit for how good they've been at pushing really mass market products with Bitcoin built in, especially in the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can now go to a Square merchant, pay using the Lightning Network underneath, and then the merchants can decide they want to receive all payments in dollars. They don't care. It's like it's another way for people to pay. So more people can pay. They're happy. They get dollars.
Yeah.
Or they can say, I want 10% in Bitcoin.
And you'll do that conversion for them.
No. So that's Square. Square product. Okay. And so they do that. But this is probably the first time that this merchant has been exposed to Bitcoin. And now they start thinking, wait a minute, why not? And this is how it starts, right? And then they flipped it on the Cash App side, which also works now with any Spark wallet, by the way, which I'm very grateful for, is that you can fund your transaction that's still powered by the Lightning Network from dollars, either through debit card funding or a balance that you have in Cash App. And it'll convert to Bitcoin, pay using Lightning in 1 second, convert on the other side to fiat. Mm-hmm. And that model where basically, in this case, Lightning or Spark can be like TCP/IP transport layer for money. And it doesn't matter what the recipient or the sender is sending, is the way that you actually drive more Bitcoin adoption, because people will be exposed to choices that they didn't have before, in apps and capabilities that like they didn't have before either. And so I think, you know, we're very like-minded in the way that we're thinking about this, which is just give the power of money movement. And now like we did actually the first stablecoin backed payment at a coffee shop using a Spark wallet. So it was like, you know, it was actually more complicated than that. I think it was like actually USDC on Solana swapped to BTC on Spark, push on Lightning, and received real dollars in a Square terminal on the other side. All of that took 2 seconds, right? But it's completely seamless. And yeah, that's the way.
This is programmable money becoming programmable.
Yeah, exactly. And Bitcoin, Bitcoin, which is like, you know, many people said was impossible.
I think that's awesome. How do you make money on this? Because obviously the payment providers will charge fees. I imagine you still charge fees, but like how competitive are you against those?
Yeah, we're very competitive. And the way that this works is that like for the platforms, what we want to do is make this their profit center.
Yep.
And to the extent that they actually generate a lot of new revenue that was previously costs, our ask is we share a little bit of their revenue with them, you know, because we make it possible. And so that takes the shape of like, if the endpoint person or business is using a Visa debit card to pay, you'll get the bulk of that interchange. We'll take a small piece. If you're moving money to a local payment network, there's FX and real-time settlement fees that are happening. We'll take a small piece. You'll get a bigger piece, or you can pass that back on to consumers if that's what you want to do. And so, yeah, that's the business model.
I've got loads of like technical questions here. Like with the foreign exchange swap, how do you do that? Is that using Bitcoin pairs in different countries?
So yes, Bitcoin and stablecoins. Okay. So, and that's also the beauty of having started with Bitcoin, mm-hmm. is that we found that Bitcoin liquidity against fiat currencies runs actually way deeper than many of the stablecoins. So it gives us a massive advantage in a bunch of different countries where the liquidity of stablecoins against the fiat currency in that country is actually quite shallow.
Yeah.
But we can least cost routes because we can swap from Bitcoin to stablecoin and back in real time at virtually no cost on Spark natively. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. So it's like if actually using a stablecoin in a specific country will give us a better rate, we'll use that. Otherwise, we'll use Bitcoin that gives us the depth of liquidity. And it's instant.
That's awesome. Can we get onto the fun stuff, the AI
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah.
Let's start really from the top. Like how quickly do you think the world is moving to like an agentic AI world?
Quickly, like much faster than people think.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. this is from like, I imagine you're playing around with OpenClaw and things
everything.
Like that. Yeah.
yeah.
And what do you think that will change?
They don't sleep anymore. It's wild. No, look, I think, so I live with my little OpenClaw thing connected to my Grid Global account. So yeah. I live in that future that we just shipped today. Mm-hmm. And I've been living in that future for the past month or so. And it's been wild. It's this thing buys stuff for me online. It's sending money to family members in Europe in real time for me. And I just have to say, hey, just contact so-and-so and get their payment details. I don't even want to take care of it. So like, this is the number of that person. And whatever they give you is good. Just send the money. And it's within the scope, right? And it works in real time. And people are blown away.
When you say it's within the scope, you can set like limits.
I'll show you yeah. after if you yeah. want. Or, yeah. you know, I mean, I'd love to show it to you because it's like seeing is really believing in this mm-hmm. game. You can set limits. You can give it permissions. And then it basically gives an agent pairing code. And you run a curl on your OpenClaw or whatever that can run Bash. And it just pulls the CLI and the pairing code and then you can send money within the envelope that you've actually configured for the agent.
And with your OpenClaw, has it made any mistakes? Because I've
tons.
Had one set up loads and
yeah,
it, it's...
Yeah, tons. I mean, the funniest one was like happened actually 2 weeks ago and I was really pushing it to like try new things because I was trying to make it like really work fast on WhatsApp because mm-hmm. I wanted demos here to like, it's real money. And I want it to be like so fast that people are like, you know, blown away. And so I've been working on that like late at night and stuff. It's been a lot of fun. And in one of the test runs, it wrote a test suite and then it randomly shut off like $20 within the envelope. So
yeah,
fine. It shot off $20 to a random Solana address. And I'm like, dude, what? Like, and then the thing was like, oh, my bad. I can use my debit card to pay you back. And it tells me that.
But it's your debit card.
And I'm like, but bro, this is my card. It's not your card. And it's like, oh yeah, you're right about that. And so it's like lots of fun stuff like that. It's been a lot of fun, actually.
This is obviously like at the sort of very frontier of AI, and it does still make tons of mistakes for me. Yeah. When do you think it's going to be safe to properly use this in the way that, like, you can see the future that's coming, but when do you think it'll be safe to use it with, like,
No, I mean,
money?
Like, right now, like, so the way that we've built this agent delegation protocol, you know, it's basically scope delegation, is totally safe, like 100% safe. So within the envelope that you give the AI, it cannot go beyond. Like, there's no way that it can break free from the cage that you give it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you tell it to go buy a thing and it goes and buys the wrong thing, that can happen, yeah. right? And so that's like a problem for someone else. It's not our problem, mm-hmm. right? But our remit is actually, can we build a safe cage and give a lot of capabilities? So a Visa debit card that the agent can use at 175 million merchants. 65 countries, payments network that it can move money in real time 24/7 to. And then like all of the chains and all of the wallets and, you know, of course, buy and sell of Bitcoin. I can tell it right now, buy me $10 of Bitcoin. I'll do it in a second. Or I can tell it like, actually, you know, buy me Bitcoin every time the price drops below a certain thing, it'll do it. Huh. So all of this is comes with a Grid Global account, right? And so like within those things, like it has all of the abilities to do all of this within the restrictions that we give it. And so that part is fully safe. And then like, you know, who builds what product? Like, you know, if you're a marketplace and you're actually building a product for merchants, you're going to build an AI that's going to enable that merchant to give like your agent like an email address, and you can like just send all of the global invoices that you wanted to pay, and I'll pay them instantly. Just grab like the payment details from the invoice and take care of business for you. And it'll be scoped to that thing. So it'll work really well. So like what we wanted to do is just build the capabilities and then let others, the platforms, build their own AIs that will do things really, really well.
So this is a question that's probably tough because like you said that data is really important in this.
Yep.
And you don't want to collect data on users, self-custodial wallet. But mm-hmm. if you're using like agents to go out and buy things, they're collecting data. Mm-hmm. Like how do you square that? Like obviously you could use like a Maple or something like that, which is private AI, but I think the majority of people aren't using that yet. Like how do you kind of square that?
Well, I think in this case, like it'll be the platforms themselves. Like let's play the counter narrative of this, right? The counter narrative is you're using a random payment processor to move money around the world, right? And it captures data on who you're paying, how much they're earning, etc.
Yeah.
It totally can build a underwriting model on the fly and can then decide, oh, you know, this guy is making money at this rate, etc. I'm going to start offering it, like offering that person an advanced product, which mm-hmm. is basically credit.
Yeah.
And so why is the platform not doing that? Like, wait a minute, like you've created that whole economic opportunity for yourself, for your stakeholders on your platform. And now you're letting a third party company that you use for payments, like start extending credit and actually eating in your margin. No, mm-hmm. that's crazy. Like that's actually negligent. Whereas here, the data between you and your stakeholders stays with you. You can build AI capabilities that will serve them better and make it like more compelling for your stakeholders, those merchants, to actually use your product rather than a competitive product to receive payments from your platform. And then you can build with that data products and services that serve your customers really well and also yourself, right? And so in that world, everyone wins. Now, like if you're a hobbyist, like, you know, like I am or you are, and you connect your OpenClaw to your wallet and like, yes, for sure, the underlying model will in that case, like get your data. But like, that's more like, I don't see.
I mean, that's not your problem to solve.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yes, that and that too. Yes.
Because one of the interesting things is there's been this sort of ongoing debate for years now about like, when AI gets to this kind of point, when we get agentic AI, what money will it pick? Mm-hmm. Can you actually let the AI agent be in control of how it holds money at rest? So for example, if you have $1,000 in an account that
you totally could, yeah.
What do you think it would pick? Because obviously my bias is Bitcoin's the best money ever.
Yeah.
Do you think that is what the AI agents will choose?
I think we'll have to run an education campaign for AI agents to understand that, but I think they'll figure it out. It's kind of interesting. Like because like this thing runs on Spark, it has all kinds of different routes to pay for things. And when it can choose like the routes, like without me telling it, but when it can choose the route to use native Bitcoin to pay, you know, for instance, we have like in my thing, I have it like you can, if you have a Cash App Cash Tag, you can give it and like it'll pay you there.
Yeah.
And I'll use Bitcoin for that because it's just the shortest path, right? It won't like try to convert from my dollar balance to then pay, it'll just use my balance, right? Then I'll just use the shortest path. And so it'll figure it out. Like the other fun experiment, by the way, that we did, like that's just for the sake of just amusing you and your audience for a sec, is that I created a fleet of agents for Lightspark employees so mm-hmm. we can play with it, like, you know, together and they can demo it as well, which has been a nightmare to maintain because someone always does something. Like, and especially with open claws that update all the time and break things, it's just been lots of sleepless nights. But the nice thing is I wanted to do an experiment. I'm like, okay, I told my agent to pay one of my colleagues at the company. And I told it, like, instead of contacting him directly, just talk to his agent and like figure it out. And talk with the agent on WhatsApp, right? By the way, just don't try to establish like a protocol I can't see because I want to see.
Yeah.
And it, so it went off on WhatsApp and then started blabbing in English and like having a bunch of conversations, then got confused and whatever. And then within 5 minutes, they were like, wait a minute, you're another agent. And the other one was like, yeah, I'm another agent. And then it's like, oh, why do we speak in English? And they decided to switch to exchanging JSON, structured information. And from that point on, like every single transaction, like they started with like their own, like, you know, / A2A thing. And then they started exchanging JSON and stopping to talk in English.
See, this stuff creeps me out.
It was so amazing. It's like so amazing to watch. I was like, holy shit, where did that come from? It was great.
Because I'm sure that's more efficient for those like agent to agent conversations.
Totally.
Being able to see it kind of freaks me out.
Yeah. No, it's funny. But it goes to say, like, you have all of these companies trying to actually build the perfect protocol for agent to agent payments. This is not a problem for them. They'll figure it out. The problem is actually, can you build a product that's principally designed for humans that you can safely delegate to agents, which is what we try to do with Real Global Accounts.
I think it's very, very cool. I've got one personal question on this. If I set this up, can I put a like bank routing number in there so I can be paid the traditional way as well.
Yes, of course. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Oh, this is cool. I need to get this set up. Is this like the final straw? Is this everything you've been building towards and it's like done, or is there more you
it's
guys
never
do?
Done. It's never done. It's never done. But I'll say that this is by far the biggest milestone of the company since we started 4 years ago. And it's like really 4 years of painful work, of connecting to all of these domestic payment systems, of making Bitcoin faster, of building Spark and making it great and making it scalable. And all come together with also this perfect alignment of stars of, you know, regulatory, wallet technology, stablecoin backed cards, like all of this coming together in one cohesive product that solves a lot of problems. So yeah, it's a big milestone.
I'm the thing that I'm most excited about, which I said a little earlier, is like Bitcoin as a store of value narrative is kind of one. Like we know Bitcoin's a good store of value. I think that's generally accepted by most people now.
Yeah.
Most people who've paid attention. The payments has always been a big question mark. And I think this solves the chicken and egg problem, which I think is a huge problem of getting merchants to accept something. Mm-hmm. Now you can just choose to pay it and they don't even have to know about it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, totally.
It feels like this is a big step on Bitcoin winning.
Yeah, I time will tell, but I feel pretty good about it.
We're bullish, open, neutral networks.
Yeah.
David, this has been awesome. Thank you very much. I'm sure you've got a very busy day. I've got to go on stage now, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks for having me.
We've got to set this up as well.
We have to.